Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Loeb, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. What does a university need with an industrial hygienist? After all, a university isn't an industry, although we have been compared to a small town before, given the size of our population. Well, our guest today is going to answer that question, explain what he does here at the university and how it helps keep all of us safe. His name is Doug Brinscoe, and he is MTSU's industrial hygienist. Welcome, Doug, and thanks for being with us today.
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me.
You came on board in August, is that right? You
said? Yes, August before the students came back.
Well, that would be just in the nick of time. Explain, first of all, what an industrial hygienist is.
Sure. An industrial hygienist is a health safety professional who has had special training in the different sciences, chemistry, biology, physics, toxicology, and a number of other areas of science that helps that person protect the health and safety of the people in the workplace and in the environment.
So you also help the university stay in compliance with OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration?
That's correct. I serve as an internal consultant and advise and provide information about the latest regulations and standards from OSHA and other regulatory agencies.
What kind of training and education do you have to undergo in order to be certified in your profession?
That's an excellent question, and I would recommend the career to high school students or also freshmen in college. The basic educational requirement is a four-year Bachelor of Science degree in one of the sciences with a strong emphasis on mathematics and science, physiology, toxicology, and the other disciplines.
Now, what are some of the things you would do to ensure that the university is safe? Do you perform building inspections? Do you take air quality monitoring tests? What exactly would you do in order to ensure that the university is a safe environment?
Excellent question. You've covered a lot of what I do, but I do a lot more than that as well. An industrial hygienist is specially trained to recognize, evaluate, and control stressors or exposures in the workplace. Exposures to physical hazards, chemicals, radiation, lasers, anything that you might find on a university campus, believe it or not, could or possibly might hurt people. So you want to protect them from those exposures by doing inspections or audits or evaluations of a workplace. What are the hazards there? Today's a very cold day, so cold stress would be a concern for our people that work outside in the university. During the summer, heat stress would be a concern for our landscaping people as well. So it's a wide variety of evaluations and inspections and basically consultations that I do with all areas of the university.
Now, this is a pretty large campus. It takes up a great deal of space, ground space, and building space. Do you go about looking at each area of the campus methodically to determine one area at a time what the needs and concerns are here, or do you take it on a case-by-case basis as problems arise?
It's a blend of both, Gina. I have a game plan, if you will, to evaluate the different areas of the university, the dairy farm, business aerospace, the chemistry buildings, the biology areas, and that's an ongoing inspection schedule, if you will. But my day can change with a phone call to respond, as you've just mentioned, to a special request. There might be an odor complaint in a building. They might have some concern with a chemical that they're working with that's not on the plan schedule. So you really have to be flexible and adapt and provide service to all different areas of the university. Sometimes my day changes very quickly with a phone call.
Now, there are certain building renovations going on campus and have been for some time now. Do you attempt to establish some kind of a working relationship with those construction crews to make sure that they are being mindful of health and safety concerns as they go, or does that not exactly come under your purview?
That's not in my area, if you will, of jurisdiction or responsibility. I'm aware of those projects, but I'm more focused on the actual university community or projects or work that's being done in the building by facilities, or some of our facility people are working on certain areas. But I don't really get involved with the contractors building perhaps our two new buildings on campus. I have not been involved with those.
So some of the concerns that you might encounter could be as simple as, say, a handrail on a staircase is loose and about to fall down, to we have some asbestos that we thought had been removed that hasn't been removed from this building, and we need to deal with that. It could run the gamut, literally.
It could run the whole spectrum from A to Z, from asbestos to zinc. Could be an odor complaint. Maybe we have some frozen sewer lines, for example, that aren't operating properly. Well, that's not good if the sewer gas, which can contain a number of hazardous airborne chemicals, if they're not being vented properly and causing an odor complaint in the building. So it could go from there to working with chemicals safely, to chemical disposal, work practices, safe work practices, evaluating how people are working with something that they've never worked with before.
Do the older buildings on campus present you with more challenges than the newer buildings do?
Yes, but they all do. Each building is unique and has its own special challenges, and depending on its age, it can vary. But yes, that's true.
We've also had and still do have a great number of disabled students on campus. Are there any special concerns, health and safety-wise, vis-a-vis your job with making sure that the campus is safe for disabled students?
I've noticed that. There are a lot of visually impaired students. I try to, in my, if you will, I do general industrial hygiene and safety rounds every day all over the university. And I look to see if ramps are blocked, if ADA doors are not operating properly. If I run across them, I report them and generate some work orders and try to anticipate and proactively fix them before they cause a problem.
Let's say people have decided to store something in a place where it's not safe for it to be stored, whether it's a flammable substance or whether it's just a bunch of stuff that's impeding a passageway that somebody might trip over. These are also sorts of things that you'd want taken care of.
Absolutely. And I work closely with my colleague, Terry Logan, who's been here for 19 or 20 years, so he knows the campus much better than I do. And he and I communicate very well and talk daily about different things. And, you know, the old saying, two sets of eyes are better than one. If I see an issue that Terry can help me with, I sure call him quickly.
Does snow and ice removal here in these winter months from the roads come under your purview as well? We haven't had a situation yet where the university has had to be shut down or anything because we haven't had a 3 or 4 inch high snowfall so far, but would that also be a concern of yours?
Well, I don't really get involved in the snow removal, but that would be related to a cold stress issue. If the landscaping or grounds people are working outside for an extended period, you want to make sure that they're kept warm and safe from the cold stress while they're, you know, addressing the different snow and ice issues. Hopefully we won't have any severe ones, but the winter is still with us.
Yeah, well, what we've had so far was minimal by comparison to what they have up north, but it was enough for me.
That's right.
What attracted you to a job here at a university as opposed to working, say, in the private sector at a factory, for example?
Well, Gina, it's a very good question. I've been very fortunate. I've worked in basically all the areas as an industrial hygienist. I've worked in the private sector. I've done emergency response, hazardous waste removal and abatement. I've worked in a major petrochemical refinery. I've worked in a university before. I've also done some consulting for various small businesses to help them with their health and safety programs. MTSU attracted me because of the challenge here. I didn't realize how large a place it is until I got here. I knew it was big, but it's quite large, and with all the students, it does need the services of a professional industrial hygienist.
Do most universities in the country have an industrial hygienist on staff? Do you know?
Yes. Yes, they do. And some universities have larger departments, larger staffs, and some have smaller ones, depending on the size and the population and the numbers of people, and also on the complexity of the research and the facilities that they operate and run. But for the most part, the state of the art these days is to have a professional health and safety staff. It's a team effort. You have safety engineers, you have environmental engineers that all talk and work together with industrial hygienists. We each have a job to do in a team effort.
Mm-hmm. You have to, in your job, I would imagine, stay in touch with people in various aspects of the campus. For example, kids use chemicals in the lab. Health services has to deal with the disposal of needles and other items that have bodily fluids on them, and they have to dispose of those properly. You really have to have a tentacle in just about every area of this campus in order to do your job effectively, don't you?
I agree. Excellent point. The job of an industrial hygienist touches many, if not all, areas of the university at some point in time or another. You mentioned the bloodborne pathogen program, if you will. As you know, a lot of activities are heavily regulated with federal and state standards. So I need to, and other industrial hygienists need to be aware and current with those requirements so that we can advise the students, advise the faculty, the management properly on how to comply and work safely, whatever the situation is, whether it's disposing of needles or working with chemicals or disposing of chemicals or cold stress, heat stress, asbestos. All of these things are heavily regulated with specific standards that apply. And you must be very, very knowledgeable about those standards so that you can do your job and provide service to many, many areas of the university.
Since regulations and laws and standards are changing all the time, both at the state and federal level, how do you keep up with the myriad of regulations that we have to comply with in order to have a safe and healthy campus?
That's the constant challenge.
Feel like you're chasing your tail sometimes.
Well, yes, sometimes, but there are ways. You speak with colleagues, you network, you get on the OSHA website, and you know, after you've done this a while, you know how to look up or find the information you need. You look up directives or the latest summary documents, what's coming down the pipeline, if you will, what's being proposed, are they looking at crane safety in industry. The OSHA webpage is very good for that, and there's other professional pages or areas in the computer that you can search, and the computer is wonderful because it helps the industrial hygienist stay current with all those standards. The Federal Register, changes, proposed changes, what might be coming, what's being discussed, what's being voted on, those kinds of things.
Does the Centers for Disease Control also factor into this as well when something happens like, say, the swine flu epidemic? Is that something that you would also want to have a hand in designing for policy or the dissemination of information, or does that not come under your purview?
Well, again, the industrial hygienist is a resource, a very good resource on campus. For example, for the student health folks, the nurses and doctors there, and I introduced myself there, I guess my first week on campus, to let them know that they did have an industrial hygienist available to them. And I work closely, just an advisory, or provide information to the doctors and the nurses, and stay current on the CDC website is another good location for H1N1 current information. Talk to the nurses and doctors in the area, find out what's going on. So you stay current and informed as much as possible. You know, information is, and knowledge is very important. Knowledge is power.
On the flip side of that coin, to what extent do you view your role as that of being an educator, going to talk to groups of faculty, groups of workers in non-academic units, going to talk to student organizations about the importance of health and safety?
Gina, that's a large part of my job as an industrial hygienist on the MTSU campus, to be a good communicator, but to also be an educator, provide training courses, go and speak to groups, Greek Row folks, housing people, the administration, facilities management, you name it, and the industrial hygienist can probably be involved at some point, or they need the information that I can provide.
You're one person. Do you feel like maybe you need two or three helpers? Or let me put it a different way. Would you be working with student workers and helping to give them, say, their majors in biology or chemistry? Would you be working with them in order to showing them what you do, maybe kids who have an interest in doing what you do for a living when they graduate?
I would strongly recommend the profession of industrial hygiene to freshmen entering college. Look at it. I know there's a shortage of doctors and nurses in the world, and there's a shortage, I think, of industrial hygienists. You know, if you're considering a career and you're not sure exactly what you want to do, look at the science and the toxicology and the chemistry and the math that you need to be a good industrial hygienist. But you've got to like people. That's the first requirement. If you don't like working with people, and you'll meet all kinds of people in this profession, you really will. But yes, I would enjoy working with. I love to teach. It's one of my loves. I love teaching students. Substitute teach. Working with an intern would be fine. But to get back to your first question, I wish I could run myself through the Xerox machine about 12 times at least. And I know my counterpart and my colleagues feel the same way. We could use more people on this campus, especially the campus of this size. And in the future, I think that will happen eventually.
Mm-hmm. With regard to the buildings that we go into, the dormitories, when the university acquires a new building, say the Ingram Building, for example, which used to be a church, before anyone moves in professionally, would it be part of your job to go into that building and look at it structurally, look at its atmosphere, and check it for any possible difficulties that might arise before renovations begin?
Oh, well, structurally, obviously we'd work closely with engineers and architects if requested. I would be specifically looking at any of the environmental concerns. Is the building old enough to maybe have some lead paint in it? Does it have some asbestos in the boiler or the basement area, or was it used as asbestos insulation somewhere? I would be looking at the environmental issues. The other issues of the building would be addressed by the architects and engineers. So again, it would be a team effort. If requested, I'd go in and evaluate it, obviously, before it was occupied, to make sure that it was indeed safe to occupy.
Are there any particular goals that you have since you've been on campus less than a year now? What have you been able to discern from going around and talking to people and looking at different situations and things? Do you have specific goals that you'd like to accomplish?
Yes, I do. An excellent question. I want to increase the awareness of health and safety on campus. It's here, but I think there's always room for it to increase and make people aware that there is an industrial hygienist and a safety function on campus. I'd like to, at some point, survey the entire campus. That's big job, mm-hmm. But all the buildings, to evaluate them, see what kind of special unique challenges or hazards may or may not be present, to address those hazards and provide that information to management and administration so that they can make informed and really good, knowledgeable decisions on where to spend the very valuable dollars and how to spend them and what needs to be addressed quickly and what can wait.
In an age of limited financial resources, do you have to prioritize health and safety concerns? Say this is the most immediate concern right now, either because it affects the largest number of people or because it represents the most difficult hazard, and then structure priorities downward from there. in terms, especially if it requires an expenditure to repair something, for example.
Excellent, excellent. In fact, you've covered what the way I think, and in medicine they call it triage. You try to take care of the worst first, if mm-hmm. possible, but you make informed and sometimes tough decisions on the challenges. Obviously, you want to take care of something that's immediately dangerous to life and health first. Serious conditions or situations, you need to address those and make a very good, wise decision on what can wait, what needs to be taken care of now, immediately, and what can be put on a schedule that can be taken care of perhaps a year from now. And that's a constant challenge, Gina, to look at, okay, maybe we've uncovered something that needs to be taken care of today. Fine, we'll deal with that. Something that can wait and be worked on in a controlled, deliberate way, a year, 6 months out, we'll do that.
Say, for example, if you're trying to balance issues, you've got an old funky elevator that keeps on breaking down. Do you spend the money for a new elevator, or do you keep on repairing the old elevator? And is it going to meet inspection standards? And what happens if a kid gets hurt on the elevator? That kind of thing.
Those are all risk-benefit types of analysis, and you take a look at it. Perhaps it's so old it needs to be taken out of service. Mm-hmm. And that's a decision that can be made. All right, but we do need an elevator for helping our ADA folks. Mm-hmm. All right, well, there's another piece of the puzzle that goes into that decision. So now we've shut down this cranky old elevator mm-hmm. and taken it out of service because it's outlived its service life, but now we need to find the dollars to put in a new, you know, elevator. Again, it's a balance and a constant challenge.
Are any of our buildings on campus sick, what you would call sick buildings? And what is a sick building anyway? We've heard that term a lot, but it's not a technical term. I think it's just something the media made up in order to describe a building where a lot of people are coming down with something or other. USA Today at one time, their headquarters in Virginia, I believe, was identified as a sick building.
It is, and it's the media has a tendency to exaggerate at times. A sick building, what does that mean? It's an overreaction at times. To my knowledge, we have older buildings here on campus. The designation sick building really doesn't apply. It might have a hazard that needs to be addressed or has been addressed or is being addressed. It can vary. It depends on the building. It depends on what's there. And that's where you get into the recognition, evaluation, and control of that hazard or hazards associated with the building. And each building has a personality. Each building's unique and different. What you find in one building, because of its age, you might never see in a more modern building, and vice versa because of the technology being used. So you need to be flexible and understand the building might have a hazard or a concern, but I wouldn't classify it as a sick building. Mm-hmm. That's a media term, and I understand why they use it, but usually there are reasons why things are happening in that building. Maybe the moisture is out of control. Maybe the air conditioning is not working properly. Maybe the filters are missing or haven't been changed, so the air quality isn't where it needs to be. Mm-hmm. All those kinds of things. So it's quite an interesting challenge when you try to evaluate a building depending on its age and what's being done in the building. Who's doing what? Who's working in the building? What kind of activities are going on in the building?
When I talk to professionals in scientific fields, they say one of their biggest challenges in talking to the media is to make complicated scientific issues understandable in layperson's terms without dumbing down the information to the point of diluting it beyond all relevancy. And you and I have been sitting here chatting, and you're doing an excellent job of explaining what you do and how you do it. But I was wondering if that ever becomes a challenge for you as someone who has to know a lot of different types of scientific information to do your job well, to break it down into layperson's terms without, watering it down to the point where it doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. That's a daily occurrence. How do I communicate the concepts of toxicology, routes of exposure, Did you inhale it? Did you eat it? Did you drink it? Did you accidentally inject it? Did you get it on your skin? Okay, you know, there are fancy technological terms, dermatitis, you know, inflammation of the skin. There's all sorts of scientific technical terms that you could use, but you'd lose your audience, or most of the lay public, in about 30 seconds. What industrial hygienists try to do is try to interpret, if you will, and we try to translate without losing the importance of the information. So I can tell you have a reddening of the skin or an inflammation of the skin, but I don't have to use the big 14-letter word that means the same thing.
Yeah.
And scientists would understand what I just said, but most of the public might not. Geez, that's a big word. What does he mean? Mm-hmm. And so the communication is an important aspect of industrial hygiene. Communicate well.
Let's go a little bit into your own personal background, if we could, for just a minute. Where do you come from originally, and where did you get, what degrees did you get, and where did you go to school?
Oh, sure. Well, thank you. We don't typically like to talk about ourselves. We don't like to blow our own horns, but I'm from New York and New Jersey originally.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up in New York and New Jersey, but grew up all over the world traveling with my dad, who worked for a petrochemical company.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen a lot of the world at an early age, which is a good education.
Mm-hmm.
Lived many, many places in the world. Went to Vanderbilt University in the early 70s, graduated from there with a Bachelor of Science, chemistry, biology. Went and started to work for Exxon Oil Company. They hired me right from school. Did graduate work at the University of Medicine and Dentistry in Piscataway, New Jersey. Exxon sent me to some excellent schools for toxicology, Wayne State, been to the CDC. I've been very, very fortunate and trained by some really good mentors in industrial hygiene, people that have written some of the textbooks in industrial hygiene. Jeremiah Lynch, who invented the cotton dust, or they call it the elutriator, you know, a real fancy word. Excuse me. Dick Brief, R.S. Brief, with his heat stress information, building on Belding and Hatch, who's a big name in industrial hygiene. So I've been very fortunate with the education and the training, the mentors that I've had, and the experiences. So I bring all that to MTSU.
Given the fact that your father was in petrochemicals and you worked for an oil company, why did you depart the oil business?
Ah, good question. The oil patch problems of the 80s, where there was some serious economic problems, similar to but not unlike today, there was a reduction in the oil industry. They just reduced the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens in private industry. So I found myself looking for another job.
Well, it's a very good answer. Would a young person looking to go into the area of industrial hygiene necessarily need more than a bachelor's? Would you suggest that they get a master's degree or a PhD, or is that not necessary?
Yes, absolutely. But I would stress that you need the real world experience as well. Get your Bachelor of Science. Get a good, strong education in the sciences, because you're going to need that in industrial hygiene, and it's a wonderful career. It's been very good to me. But then go on and get additional training, a master's in public health, if you will. Look into toxicology. Find out your niche or your special skill that you really enjoy. Maybe you like respiratory protection or something to do with the lungs and respiratory issues. Maybe you're real strong in that area. Well, that applies to industrial hygiene. So yes, go on and get as much education as you can.
And that education would include, I assume, professional development opportunities even after you've been in the workforce as long as you have. I take it you stay up on things by going to conferences and
yes,
that sort of thing.
Yes, you do. You try to, continuing education is important. Talking with colleagues, staying current with the developments. You know, the industrial hygiene we did in the 1970s and 80s is not the industrial hygiene we can do today because of the technology that's now available. A lot of the instrumentation you have to stay current with, the analyzers, things we couldn't sample for many years ago. Now we can sample for immediately and have real-time answers on what the levels are. Are they excessive or are they minimal?
We look forward to seeing you around campus doing a lot of things that help keep us safe, checking into things that perhaps we wouldn't even have noticed, but to your trained eye, it constitutes something that needs to be taken care of. And it's a surprise to me that we haven't had someone of your level of expertise here now, but I can certainly understand why on a campus with 23,000 students and thousands of employees, it would be an absolute must, to say nothing of millions of government regulations.
Well, thank you. My days are very busy, as you can imagine, and no one day is the same, and I'm really pleased and honored to be here and providing the service to the campus and just the wonderful people I meet in my daily travels across campus. That's a reward in itself.
Doug Brinsko, industrial hygienist at MTSU, the very first. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Join us again at this same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can catch the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com. And we're available on iTunes.